Welcome to an AFR Christmas special with Dr. Ray Pritchard of Keep Believing Ministries. Now, here's Dr. Ray.
Let's begin with these familiar words from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 2, verse 7, from the King James Version. And she brought forth her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. While doing some preparation for this message, I ran across a sermon title that stuck in my mind. Someone preached on this text using the title, Miracle on Manger Street. That's clever and catchy, and it's also appropriate because there really was a miracle on Manger Street the night Jesus was born. The scene portrayed in Luke 2:7 is so familiar that it has become unmistakable. We call it a creche, a representation of the birth of Christ, either with statuary or in a painting, or sometimes with actors portraying Joseph, Mary, and Jesus. Usually, the setting is quite pastoral, with Mary and Joseph watching as Jesus sleeps in the clean wooden feeding trough. Sometimes, there is a glowing light emanating from baby Jesus. The straw is fresh. Overhead, the stars twinkle in the sky. Nearby, the cattle and the sheep rest contentedly, and the faithful donkey, there's almost always a donkey, watches the happy parents. And very often the shepherds and the wise men bow before the babe in the manger. As I said, it's a sweet and beautiful scene. It is also quite dangerous. I know a creche is dangerous because you can't put one on government property or on almost any public place these days. If you do, you might get sued. Someone is almost certain to be offended. But the real problem with the creche lies not in any supposed offense, but in the fact that this peaceful, bucolic scene bears little connection to what really happened that night in Bethlehem. It wasn't very peaceful. It couldn't have been that clean. Nothing would have been as beautiful as we make it appear, and there's no reason to believe that the shepherds and the wise men saw Jesus at the same time. And, well, we really don't know, do we, about the cattle and the donkey and the sheep. Now, the major problem rests in one fact. The Son of God from heaven comes to earth and is born in a stable because there was no room in the inn. We hear this so often that we take it for granted, but it does not seem right. To help us think about this one fact of Jesus' birth, let's ponder together three questions. Number one, what's wrong with this picture? Number two, why does God allow it? And number three, what do we learn from it? From our point of view, Jesus should not have been born in a stable, but he was. Surely this was not an accident, but a message from God to our hearts. So, question one, what's wrong with this picture? Perhaps the place to begin is with a note about Bethlehem. If you visit Bethlehem today, and by the way, I hope that when all the fighting over there is done, I hope someday you'll take a trip to the Holy Land because it will certainly change your life. And when you do, you'll find out that Bethlehem today is a fairly large, bustling Arab town located 7 or 8 miles south of Jerusalem. You reach Bethlehem by traveling to Jerusalem and then driving down a wide paved road. The situation in that part of the world is very tense nowadays, and although it would not be advisable to walk from Jerusalem to Bethlehem, you could do it easily in an hour or two. In Jesus' day, Bethlehem, well, it was no bustling Arab town. Back then, it was a tiny Jewish town, a small, out-of-the-way village, one of the least important towns in all of Judah. One writer called it a hamlet, meaning a quaint little village. A few shepherds lived there, some farmers, a few merchants, and that was about it. It was a small Jewish village made famous only because it was King David's hometown. Now, one part of the story involved a man named Caesar Augustus in faraway Rome, who, prompted by God, decreed that a census be taken so that taxes could be collected throughout the Roman Empire. The census required that all Jewish males go back to their ancestral hometowns to register. Since Joseph was descended from David, he had to return to Bethlehem. It happened that Mary was in her final stages of pregnancy when they arrived in Bethlehem. Now, I would put happened in quotes because God arranged everything so that the emperor issued the decree at just the right moment and in just the right way, so that at just the right time, Mary and Joseph arrived in Bethlehem so that they were exactly where the prophet Micah said they would be when Jesus was born. That's Micah 5:2. It all seemed to just happen, but what seemed to be the chance movements of time and fate and some imperial decree, no, it was not chance at all. It was the hand of God moving through history to accomplish his purposes. If God ordains it, he will make a way. And God did ordain everything that happened that night in Bethlehem. Part of our problem in understanding the story revolves around the word inn, as in there was no room in the inn. We are so immersed in American culture that we read the text this way: there was no room for them at the Holiday Inn Express in Bethlehem, or they couldn't find a room at the Greater Jerusalem Hampton Inn, or the Ramada Inn, or the Sheraton, or the Hilton. We tend to think of a nice building near a freeway exit, three or four stories tall, with a nice clean parking lot, a large lobby, a pool, and a hot tub, a Coke machine on every floor, with hot showers, cable TV, free Wi-Fi, and of course, a hot, big, sumptuous breakfast buffet. To us, roughing it is what happens when the ice machine is broken. So, if you can, please clear your head of those notions. In all the Roman Empire, there was not a single inn as nice as the average Holiday Inn Express. In those days, travel was dirty, difficult, and dangerous. Creature comforts were hard to come by. Travelers needed safety and security from the robbers that could be found on every highway. An inn, well, at least in some senses, an inn was simply a building where you could rest safely during the night. Indoor plumbing was not an option, and cable TV and a hot breakfast buffet was, well, that's 20 centuries in the future. In order to properly understand what happened, it helps to know that Luke used two different words for inn when he wrote his gospel. One word refers to a small building dedicated to serving travelers. And that's probably the closest thing to our modern concept of a hotel or a motel. At one end of the building, you tied up your horses and donkeys. For a fee, the innkeeper allowed you to sleep on a rough mattress on the floor. He also kept the fire going and provided fodder for the animals. This was the inn Jesus mentioned in the parable of the Good Samaritan in Luke 10. If you ever travel on the old road from Jericho to Jerusalem, your bus will probably stop at the Inn of the Good Samaritan, a simple building located at the traditional site of the inn that existed in Jesus' day. Now, when Luke told the story of Jesus' birth, he used a different word for inn in Luke 2, verse 7. That word basically means guest room. This inn would be even smaller and simpler than the one in Luke 10. The animals would be kept in a stable that was often nothing more than a cave in a hillside with low rock walls to keep the animals from wandering away during the night. It was an inn such as this that had no room for Mary and Joseph and Jesus on that holy night in Bethlehem. Now, why were they turned away? No doubt the inn, the guest room, was full that night. Perhaps other descendants of David had come to Bethlehem to enroll for the census. And the innkeeper would not have known Joseph because he was from Nazareth. Perhaps because they were poor, they could not pay. And perhaps the innkeeper, seeing that Mary was very pregnant, did not want to drive off the other customers. The only thing we know for certain is that there was no room for them. Everything else is just conjecture. And that brings me back to the major point. From a human point of view, nothing in this picture looks right. Jesus deserved better. God could have done better. So why did it happen like this? That leads us then to the second question. Why does God allow it to happen this way? Now, even though I wrote that question myself, I think it's not strong enough. If we believe in the sovereignty of God, then I think we must believe that God did not simply allow his son to be born in a stable. We must believe that God ordained it. There was no room in the inn because God wanted it that way. If God had wanted it some other way, then it would have happened that other way. In order to work our way to an answer, let's back up for a bit. Joseph and Mary were compelled by the census to return to Bethlehem in the later stages of Mary's pregnancy. It seems clear that they arrived in Bethlehem just a few days before she gave birth to Jesus. The journey itself would have been difficult and dangerous. 6, 7, maybe 8 days from Nazareth in Galilee to Bethlehem in Judea. Pious Jews traveling from Nazareth would have gone east across the Jordan River, then south through Perea, crossing into Judea at Jericho. They would have ascended through the mountains to Jericho and then made the 7 or 8 mile journey south to Bethlehem. That jagged journey east, south, west, south allowed them to avoid Samaria altogether. So that 90-mile journey might have taken 6 or 7 or even 8 days, traveling slowly because of Mary's advanced pregnancy. So they arrived at Bethlehem, were turned away at the inn, and the baby was born in a stable, outdoors, in the cold, with the animals no doubt nearby. They had no privacy, no sanitation, and very little protection from the elements. The fact that there was no room in the inn turns out to be much more than an incidental detail. In fact, it is central to who Jesus is. Now that we know why he came, surely we will say he had to be born this way. It couldn't have happened any other way. Is there a hint here of his upcoming death? I believe there is. Turned away from the inn and resting in a feeding trough, he was already bearing the only cross a baby can bear, extreme poverty and the contempt and indifference of mankind. In the words of Francis of Assisi, "For our sakes, he was born a stranger in an open stable. He lived without a place of his own wherein to lay his head, subsisting by the charity of good people, and he died naked on a cross in the close embrace of holy poverty." This baby, lying forgotten in an exposed stable, resting in a feeding trough, is God's appointed sign to us all. This is a true incarnation. God has come to the world in a most unlikely way. This surely is what Philippians 2:7 means when it says that he made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. Now, that night, nothing about the baby Jesus appeared supernatural. If you and I had been walking by the stable that night in Bethlehem, we would have seen a young couple, perhaps late teens, and a baby lying in a feeding trough. There were no halos, no angels visible, and no choir singing. If you had been there and you had no other information, you would have concluded that this was just a baby born to a poor young couple down on their luck. Nothing about the outward circumstances pointed to God, yet all of it, every part of it, every single solitary, seemingly random detail was planned by the Father before the foundation of the world. To the unseeing eye, nothing looks less like God. To those who understand, God's fingerprints are everywhere. And that leads me then to the third question. What do we learn from this? If we stand back and consider this one aspect of the Christmas story, some amazing truths emerge. We learn something about God and something about the world, something about Jesus and something about his followers. First, we learn that God uses adverse circumstances that make no sense at the time to accomplish His future purposes. At first glance, the fact that there was no room at the inn seems like an insignificant detail in the larger picture. But I assure you that it was no small detail to Joseph and Mary. Being turned away at the very moment when the baby was coming must have been devastating. Giving birth in a stable no doubt tested their faith to the limit. Certainly, it would not have made sense at the time. Mary and Joseph, no matter how devout they were, simply could not have foreseen how this negative turn of events would turn about to be part of God's plan to bring His Son to the world. They might have believed it, but they would not have seen it in advance. Life is like that. We don't know what is coming around the corner, and many things we endure make no sense at all. Sometimes they don't make sense for years to come, and sometimes they never make sense to us. Second, the rejection of Christ by His own people was a portent of things to come. So let me say it this way. If Mary and Joseph came to the great city of Chicago, they would be turned away from the Palmer House and the Hilton. If they came to the village of Oak Park, they wouldn't be able to stay at the Carlton or the Rite Inn. And Mary wouldn't have her baby at Rush Presbyterian or Loyola or West Suburban Hospital. If Jesus were born today, it would happen in a ramshackle tenement building or in a field in the country or in a remote village in India. The world that had no room for Him has no room for Him now. John 1:11 says, He came into His own, but His own did not receive Him. You could easily translate that which was His own as His own home. He came to His own people, the nation of Israel, and they did not receive Him. Perhaps you've heard it said that home is where, when you go there, they have to take you in. Jesus came home to His own people, and they wouldn't take Him in. He came to the people who should have known Him best, and they wanted nothing to do with Him. They should have known better. They knew He was coming. God had told them over and over and over again. They had ample warning. Moses said, He's coming. David said, He's coming. Isaiah said, He's coming. Jeremiah said, He's coming. Daniel said, He's coming. Micah said, He's coming. Zechariah said, He's coming. And in the very last book, the very last page, the very last chapter of the Old Testament, Malachi said, He's coming. Every book, every chapter, every page of the Old Testament testifies to one great truth. He's coming. That's the theme of the Old Testament, that God would one day send the Messiah to the earth to deliver His people Israel. When Jesus finally came, they didn't believe it, and some of them decided to put Him to death. He came to His own people, to the one place where He might be welcomed, to His hometown, to His own family, and His own did not receive Him. And my friends, nothing has changed in the 2,000 years since then. The world that had no room for Him, the world that put Him in the stable, the world that didn't want Him, the world that wasn't ready, that same world has no room for Him now. Third, we learn that His humiliation started early and continued to the very end. He was born outside because they wouldn't let Mary and Joseph come inside. During His ministry, He told His disciples that foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay His head. He owned nothing but the clothes on His back, and when He was crucified, the soldiers gambled for His robe. When He died, they buried Him in a borrowed tomb. The whole story is quite remarkable if you think about it. After I preached on this, a friend came up and said, "It's a miracle. We worship a man born in a dumpster." If that's an exaggeration, the point is still true. Another person asked me what I thought the stable smelled like. "Like a stable," I replied. "Like a barn. It wasn't a nice place to be born." It's closer to the truth to say we worship a man born in a dumpster than to say we worship a man born in a palace. Jesus is more than a man. He's the Son of God. But He's not less than fully human either. Our Savior's birth pictured the whole course of His life. He was an outsider in every sense. He came from outside this earth. He was born outside the inn, and he died outside the city walls. What happens to Jesus happens to his followers sooner or later. Just as there was no room for Jesus, there's no room for his followers either. This week, I noticed a detail in the Christmas story that, for one reason or another, I had never seen before. Whenever I had read or heard Luke 2:7, I always read and heard the last phrase this way, because there was no room for him in the inn. But that's not what Luke said. He actually wrote, because there was no room for them in the inn. Remember, the innkeeper had no idea that the Messiah was about to be born. I had always read it as if there was no room for Jesus. True enough, but there was no room for Mary or Joseph either. Even that detail tells a story. They are also outside the inn when Jesus is born. What happened to him happened also to them. That too is a pattern for the future. Many years later, Jesus challenged his disciples this way: if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. When Christ calls us, he bids us come and die with him. Because there was no room in the inn, the final call is always individual. The world has no room for Jesus. Will you make room for him in your heart? The story is told of a little boy who was chosen to play the innkeeper in the annual children's Christmas play at his church. When the night came, all the children were in their places, nervously waiting for the play to begin. The girls were dressed as angels, the boys as shepherds and wise men. While the little girls talked and giggled, the boys poked each other with their shepherd staffs. The little boy chosen to play the innkeeper had only one line. When Joseph knocked on the door, he was to open it and tell them there was no room in the inn. As the play began, parents and grandparents wondered how their children would do that night. Everything proceeded as planned. At last, the big moment came for the innkeeper. Joseph knocked on the door. The little boy opened it and saw Joseph and the very pregnant young Mary. Something about the sight of Mary touched his heart, and he blurted out the show-stopping line: "There's no room left in the inn, but you can share my room." Some people thought the Christmas pageant had been ruined. Others thought it was the best one ever. The little boy told the frustrated director later, "I just couldn't send Jesus away. I had to find a place for Jesus." When Charles Spurgeon preached on this text, he gave this appeal: "Even as an infant, by being laid in a manger, he was set forth as the sinner's friend. Come to him, ye that are weary and heavy laden. Come to him, ye that are broken in spirit, ye who are bowed down in soul. Come to him, ye that despise yourselves and are despised of others. Come to him, thief and drunkard. In the manger there he lies, unguarded from your touch and unshielded from your gaze. Bow the knee and kiss the Son of God. Accept him as your Savior, for he puts himself into that manger that you may approach him. Here is good news for the worst of sinners. Good news for all of us. Great Christmas good news. Though the whole world may turn away, you can open your heart and let him in. And if he comes in, he will never leave you. Lord God, make my heart a manger where the Christ child may be born." Pray that way. God will hear and answer, and Jesus will be born in your heart today. On that happy note, I wish you and yours a very merry and very blessed Christmas celebration.